Hello and welcome to this latest episode of Sap Chat. I'm your host, Jaron Main. Now, in previous episodes with Vivian Bosch and Gerd Danner, and then with Dave Lowson from Capgemini, we explored a clean core utilising BTP. One person who commented on both and reached out was Alistair Back. Alistair has some pretty strong views on the clean core message and thinks we're in danger of missing the very essence of SAP and customization. Alistair is co-founder of Dragon ERP with extensive SAP engagements under his belt, too numerous to run through in this very short intro. Alistair started life in the British Army and served 23 years before embarking on his IT career. So, welcome to Sap Chat, Alistair. Great to have you here. I said in the intro that you'd started off life in the British Army, did 23 years there. And you make reference in LinkedIn that it's made you who you are today. So how does somebody do 23 years in the British Army, which is not an insignificant amount of time, and then find themselves as co-founder of Dragon ERP?
Yeah, okay. So that 23 years is a mix of regular army and reserve. Mm-hmm. And as a kid, I grew up in a British Army on the Rhine command post.
Right.
So I was a signaller and worked in a war room, essentially. And that was really good because you get the rigor of command and control. Mm-hmm. You know, so everybody from the consulting background always goes on about, for a cutover, let's set up a war room. Mm-hmm. Well, I actually grew up in a war room, you know, and therefore that's been with me ever since. And I've actually got a blog underway currently, which is all about discipline, command and control, and why it enables S4 programs. So I came out of the regular army quite young. And was looking for something to do, and my reserve unit got me a role with the Inland Revenue. So I got into computerization of the UK tax system
right
at the beginning of computerization in the public sector. So I actually saw some big transformation programs going on in the tech space early days. And funnily enough, it went actually quite well, all around data migration. But that got me into computerization account. So I left the revenue and went to into practice and very quickly became one of the early individuals who could computerize accounts. So you're talking about computerization, the early FTSE, using systems like Pegasus and stuff. And SAP really wasn't known in the UK, neither was Oracle. I mean, it's taken a long time for proper ERP to really filter into the UK. So really computerizing for like listed companies and focusing around FP&A as well. So even back then, sort of like the construct of BPC in terms of FPA, it was more around data and analytics really than sort of like P&L and balance sheet. And then one day I got headhunted by McKinsey to focus on computerization of some dysfunctional clients of them. So they had clients running SAP and they needed sort of like computer savvy or finance savvy people who knew how to computerize accounts to work for them. And so I dropped in and started to work around some key accounts, WorldCom, Global Crossing, Marconi. So all those sort of like really dysfunctional clients in the 90s, I had a stab at, which is really good. So that really got me into the globalization, really, globalization of SAP. Mm. I never looked back, really. And it, even though I've been involved in SAP for 33 years, it fundamentally hasn't changed much in that time. Really hasn't.
It does feel like we're in the late 90s to me again, all over. But anyway, I was saying in the intro that I'd obviously, in the last few episodes, I'd done a couple on clean core of SAP. and one of which was with Vivian Boshin and Gerd Danner from SAP. There was one towards the end of the year, end of last year, with Dave Lowson. And each time you were very vocal, Alistair, in your commentary, which is absolutely you, but you were very, very forthright in actually commenting both on LinkedIn and out to me to say, well, hang on a second, you know, what is this clean core, and is it all it's meant to be, and aren't we throwing the baby out with the bathwater? And I think that's where you and I picked up a conversation. I said, well, look, come on, let's do an episode on this and let's discuss it, because I think deep down your feelings are that maybe pursuit of a clean core as a nirvana is not the right approach.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I mean, every time I see this stuff, I do message to people concerned. So I normally have, if what you see on LinkedIn is just the tip of the iceberg of some of the conversations. And when you have private conversations with people, the messaging changes slightly. I mean, you know, Clean Core is really good for some of David's really huge clients Capgemini have got, who are transitioning to an S4 Clean Core. But they're not doing it because they wanted to go Clean Core. They're doing it because their entire business model is changing, and they're totally regearing their products, their manufacture, their supply chain. So it was a really good point in time to do that. But they're not doing it because Clean Core added any real value, other than the fact that it made sense at the time because they were doing lots of big stuff anyway. I think Clean Core is a real hindrance in the SAP space at the moment. I think it's really confusing. And I think what it does is it delays customers opting to go to S4. I mean, let's just be clear about it. You know, S4 by a country mile is the best ERP solution in the world, by a country mile. It doesn't matter what flavor you go on, PCE or public or on a hyperscaler. It doesn't really matter. But, you know, ultimately S4 is where you want to be. So the conversation's really about, there are 35,000 customers, 60% of the install base are still on ECC. Universally, everyone agrees they're not going to shift. And you can stick a gun to their head and, you know, make all the threats you like. But if they're as old and grey as me, they've been there before. Mm. You know, it makes no odds. So for me, the conversation's about saying, well, I value S4, I really do. But more importantly, I don't just value S4, I value the greater SAP cloud and all the other application products out there in terms of providing a best-of-breed target operating model. And I want to change the conversation away from S4 and back to the target operating model and back to how can organizations really gain value from SAP without it always having to be this singular route, which is S4 cloud, and then with a clean core. And for me, it bangs off ideology. So I wrote a blog last year said that SAP Cloud was SAP's ideology, you know, and they're throwing too much at this because it was lacking any form of empathy for the client. Mm. It was SAP Cloud, really without explaining the value of SAP Cloud. And then I think that the clean core is a subset of that in terms of really saying, look, you know, clean core is really good from an SAP perspective because SAP now believe they're a hyperscaler. You know, this isn't SAP of before, where SAP used to be single code, hosting agnostic. There was only one version of R3, one version of ECC, and in the early days, one version of S4. And you could host it wherever you wanted. So now SAP or hyperscaler, and the clean core construct is very much around saying, look, you know, we need to be able to maintain infrastructure as a service, software as a service. This is about service management, and it's about saying, well, look, you know, it makes it easier for us. So it makes it easier for us if you migrate your entire target operating model away from where you are currently to something which is easy for us to maintain. Mm. And with that, all your extensions, all your integration, all your microservices will now be in a sidecar, PaaS, which then happens to be BTP. And the value to the organization is always this nirvana, which is with the pace of singularity and, you know, the space, the speed of change constantly now with AI dropping as well. Mm. It makes sense for you to be on the clean core because it's the easiest way for you to consume the value from all this great new functionality coming in, which you could drop onto your operating model, but without really thinking about the customer and having any empathy for the customer in terms of, can they really consume the change? Do they really want to run that fast? Are they really looking at all this new stuff? Mm. You know, so it's very much driven by an SAP optic about this is really good for us because it really enables us to be a hyperscaler, an ICT.
Yeah.
And SAP have never been an ICT.
Yeah, and that was very much the message from Vivian and Gerd, to be fair. It was kind of, you know, the notion of, and I've said this many times, but you know, think of SAP as a kind of a motorway, a freeway, call it what you will. The customizations are kind of traffic on that freeway. And actually, that's only going to cause trouble later on when you're trying to upgrade. Now, of course, if you're thinking about this in a public cloud kind of way, in an infrastructure kind of way, hyperscaler point of view, if you like, then that is important because you just simply want to upgrade the underlying infrastructure and not have any problems. And then, so the notion that they were saying was like, put these customizations onto BTP. Again, like you say, sidecar, lift it up out of the way, it's no longer a problem. Yep. But the reality is that I keep coming back to, and you've made this point many times, and so have so many other customers. There is a point of saying a lot of the customizations out there, the SAP estates are 20, 30, 40, you know, 40 years old. In many cases, there's a lot of customization that's now redundant, or actually some of that is now standard functionality anyway. So there is a case to say, go through and clean that up and get rid of it where you don't need it. But the very core essence of customization, certainly when I started off life in the early to mid 90s with SAP, was, you know, you can get SAP to reflect what you are as an organization. And if every organization opened SAP out of the box and it was vanilla, there would be no differentiation. So customization is key in a way to actually having your unique source as an organization, and there's your value.
I think that's right. I mean, we used to say that we could make an R3 system, make an espresso if you wanted to throw enough money at it. But I think there's sort of like a bigger construct, which is SAP, or almost just at that tipping point whereby the absolute brilliance of what SAP is and the value it brings to the global economy is almost there, and then they forget about it again. So I think, you know, look, from an SAP perspective, in the last couple of, let's say last 4 or 5 years, absolutely, SAP was key to enabling the global supply chain to sort of mitigate the pandemic. Because you think about the global, 92% of the global Fortune 2000 runs on SAP. Mm. Most of it's automated. It hummed. You know, SAP were there in 2021 with the World Economic Forum and the UN driving net zero, right? You know, SAP did the McKinsey Alliance, and then subsequently Bain and Boston, all around the target operating model. It's always about process and our target operating model. They just get to that point where they can say, look, it's all about the target operating model. It's really great stuff SAP is. And then they go back into sort of like techie nutcase space. And then I think the problem you've then got is you say, look, my investment in SAP is a generational investment. Once you've invested in SAP, you're on it for life. You're not really going to move off. But it's a generation investment. And therefore, when you look at sort of like your enhancements, if we look at a lot of the ECC customers, that's 60%. Mm. They're all good customers. They are a cash cow for SAP. Mm. Come on. They're not going to move. They're loyal. Mm. But what they've done is they've embraced SAP when it was Industry 3.0. Mm. Okay. And what have they done? They've been able to optimize their process. They've optimized their people. And they've got massive amounts of automation built in. So when it comes to then doing a big change program, again, they really struggle because they're people optimized. You know, they really struggle. But there's the construct of saying, well, they've really got their operating model working how they want it to work. And therefore, how much value is there? So I agree with what you said in terms of there's a halfway house in terms of the clean core. There's the bit about saying, the rice stuff I don't need anymore or don't use, I shouldn't take. But the rice F, which still adds value, and let's say I invested 10, 15 years ago. Come on, that's the return on investment is absolutely massive on some of these enhancements, and they're still working today. So if it's still working and it adds value, then I should take it. Then as I move forward with S4, as more and more new functionality comes in and whatever, I can make that decision based upon the business case, whether or not I want to do away with my automation and say whatever's coming from SAP. And it's that nuanced conversation, it's that showing that level of empathy, which then says, as you said, every customer's different, you know. And I think that's interesting. So out of about 60% of ECC customers, they're all different, but they're all loyal. They're all moved to S4 at some point in time, but they get scared. And the reason they're scared is, one, because the clean core equates to a massive cleanup then. And cleanup means disruption. That means organizational change impact. And organizational change impact comes at a cost, okay? And organizations are struggling at the moment. There's so much going on in the world, yeah. So much disruption. It's a cost they don't need. They really don't. And therefore, SAP have got to be mindful about, if I want to take this 60% and get them onto S4, which we all want, then we've got to reduce some of those barriers. And the clean core is one of those barriers. I really believe that. I think the other barrier is SAP, for me personally, I believe they've made a fundamental mistake in the deviation of S4, public and private. I think it should have been based upon S4 is S4 wherever you go, and you could have it on public or you could have private, but it should be the same.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't, and you're scaring people now, SAP, because CIOs are savvy. They're really savvy. And they're seeing SAP moving towards a single code S4 solution that happens to be SaaS public cloud, which ain't where the install base wants to go. So there's a problem to start off with. And by the very nature of its clean, it's going to be the public cloud. It de facto means clean core. And you got this in people's minds now.
Yeah, totally, totally. And it's interesting, you talk about that in terms of, you know, supply chain as well, because we have seen, and I'm seeing a lot, particularly focusing around digital manufacturing in my own role at the moment, a lot of organizations are looking very, very closely at this kind of automation and innovation. But, you know, a lot of those organizations still a long way away. Some of them haven't even got connectivity. They haven't even got IoT. I say haven't even got, but some of them don't have that. So when you're talking to them, in some respects, you're almost taking them a nirvana of the future, but they're saying, well, we're 10 paces behind that. You know, how do you help me even start to get kind of connectivity to some of the plant? And that's a big issue across the board, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, because I think it goes back to SAP's stance, which is very, very binary. So SAP's stance is so binary about it's got to be S4, it's got to be SAP Cloud. You've got to do all of that before you can leverage the wider SAP product space. But if SAP were slightly more sensible, they'd be looking at exactly that and saying, well, okay, manufacturing, certainly in terms of supply chain and more 3PL, certainly in terms of production planning, even in terms of sort of like supply chain optimization, it's all sits outside the S4 core if you want it to. So there's this bit about saying, and I think Steve Ingram, made a lot of talks about it. When Steve was at Deloitte, Steve used to talk about this all the time, which was all about, you've got your SAP core necessarily in an early S4 and ECC, but a lot of your innovation, you just plug and play because you can adopt it. And David Lawson's just said the same in terms of the way in which a lot of his customers were consuming S4 was not a big bang. They were doing it by line of business.
Yeah.
So you then having that conversation with customers and say, look, you know what, in the S4 manufacturing space, you know, we've got S4 manufacturing cloud. fantastic. Look at the innovation there. You can do that around your ECC core. You don't need to move all of ECC onto S4 to get the value from S4. And that's something you talk about a lot in terms of that almost that two-tier architecture piece, which was go back to the early days with CFIN, and CFIN very much was the Trojan to get early customers onto S4. So SAP looked as if they were getting traction in the S4 space when they weren't.
Yeah.
Just to enable finance organizations to bring together their sort of like diverse and federated finance architectures onto an SAP core, which then enabled them to pump into BPC so they could do FP&O. And a lot of organizations do look at two-tier ERP, and a lot of organizations would look more closely at the broader SAP product range if SAP spoke more around the total sum of the SAP offering rather than banging on about S4 clean core constantly. And for me, that's the bit which says too many hoops and you're constantly lacking focus. Because when you look at the AI roadmap, which got published back end of November, it's been updated since, but you look at that, you see that most of the innovation which is sitting there are either in BTP, all the other SAP Cloud products, all the S4 Cloud templates, not in core S4.
Yep.
So if you're a CIO and you're server, you're thinking, why do I need to worry about moving my ECC so quickly into S4 when all the innovation's over there?
Yeah, there is that. And I've often, I very nearly wrote a blog about this, but you know, the thing was, right, in the early 90s, the notion of an ERP was grey. You'd go into any organisation and you'd say, look, ERP exists because you've got a sales application, you've got a finance application, so on and so forth. None of them talk to any others. You have now got an integrated application, single version of the truth. Now we've got to, and I understand how it's happened, but we've almost got to the point where SAP have created the very thing they were trying to prevent in the beginning. So we've now got ECC, S4, we've now got Ariba, we've now got SuccessFactors. Some of that functionality sits in SuccessFactors, some of it in core HR. I know that's changing gradually, but customers do look at this and say, and I've got to buy a license for each one. So am I not? I mean, I know it's integrated in a cloud sense, but it doesn't sometimes help. There are a subset of customers out there saying, but isn't this just complicating matters further?
I think you're right, because I think back in the day, life was so much easier because we had ECC, we had SRM, built into ECC was HCM, you know, we had a bit of BW, we had BPC, and that did everything for us. You know, the architecture was simple, but it was expansive in terms of how much of the enterprise it touched. And I think that's important because, again, with this sort of S4 conversation, SAP, I agree with you, almost shot themselves in the foot because they were, you know, SAP run on themes, don't they? You know, what is the current theme SAP are bagging out this month of craziness? So they did sort of a whole load of crazy stuff talking about composable ERP. Okay. Well, for me, that's a bit of an own goal because we all see organizations now, when they look at S4 and look at the S4 business case, one of the things they look about is saying, well, S4 is not a match to ECC. It's not a like for like. And in the early days, S4 customers were given compatibility packs to close down the gaps. But a lot of those compatibility packs are coming to an end. And at the same time, I love my HCM in ECC. And I know that we've got the new HCM for S4. I don't really want SuccessFactors. I don't like it. And I don't like Workday. And to be quite honest, pure P2P in S4, it ain't as good as SRM. So I think I might go ESCA. You know, and suddenly, SAP has done exactly what you've said, is they've got CIOs thinking and the CFOs thinking, do you know what? There's other tooling out there which is just as good in the cloud. So that's plug and play, but it's cheap as chips. It does just the same stuff as SAP without any of our licensing, you know, rubbish.
Now, I'm sure if Dave was listening to this, he'd say, yeah, but look, you know, the argument he made was there's a lot of people being really negative of SAP. SAP has to survive. It has to continue to innovate. It has to go down the public cloud route, whether the deviation between public and private is the right thing. But fundamentally, it needs to do that. It needs to be successful for all of us to be successful and for the product to continue to thrive. So do you think from what you're saying, though, that actually SAP probably made a mistake quite a few years ago in terms of the cloud strategy and therefore now is trying to play catch up? Because you could argue that some of the hyperscalers are even in competition with SAP in terms of bring your ECC environment or S4 environment, put it onto our cloud platform, and then extend the tooling based on our tools on the cloud platform.
I think absolutely. I think I wrote a blog about Cloud Wars and SAP and about how SAP allowed the hyperscalers onto their turf, onto their lawn, without really thinking about the impact it was going to have. And I think the problem was back in the day, SAP didn't understand the true value of SCP before it became BTP. And the real game changer is PaaS. You know, yeah. It's not the cloud per se, it's more PaaS and what sits in the PaaS architecture, because that's where all the innovation sits these days. So I think, yes, they made a mistake, but I think the biggest mistake was trying to get into the tin and string market. There's no value in tin and string. I mean, been done some fantastic work this year with AWS. A couple of times, so really seen their strength in terms of what they do as infrastructure as a service hosting SAP. Mm. And then having to look at the miserable charade, which was RISE currently, and the infrastructure as a service. And if you've been, you know, look at Fujitsu. Fujitsu are, you know, for generations have been doing ICT. Mm. So it's in the DNA of Fujitsu in terms of this is what we do and we do it really well. Mm. AWS, GCP, you know, Azure, fantastic at doing infrastructure as a service and providing PaaS. And the level of support you get is just tremendous. That's not in SAP's DNA to provide infrastructure as a service. And they're not particularly good at it. And I think that's an issue. Tin and string is not their core. SAP's core is about innovating the operating model. It's about operating model innovation. It's about process innovation. It's about data innovation. So I've got a client who's actually moving to Clean Core now. Okay. $5 billion organization, 40 opcos, all moving to a Clean Core because they had a business case to do so. So they wanted to standardize their finance target operating model. They wanted some AI innovation in there. But more importantly, because of SOX and some other things, they wanted an aligned process control framework. Mm. Worked really well. Good, you know, they knew what they were doing. Great empowerment, CFO down, no issue. The most disappointing part of the program really is just how SAP have provided infrastructure as a service. It's not the same. And then moving away from an AWS to SAP so they could see like for like. And I think that's disappointing. And I think what it does is, and David's wrong, you know, I'd tell David he's wrong. And the reason he's wrong is because SAP need to be talking about the innovation in the enterprise application space and the AI space and saying, look at what we do really well. You know, look at the way in which they acquired Hybris, sliced it up, and it's now all cloud-based. But come on, you know, look at the way in which SAP can slice through any type of billing. You know, look at revenue recognition. Look at some of the really big problems SAP can handle, you know. Look at the innovation now coming in from AI, whether it's sort of like, you know, whether it's from Copilot, you know, whether it's SAP Analytics Cloud and sort of like innovation coming in there. This is where SAP needs to be driving, because most of the ECC base would love to consume a lot of this innovation.
Yeah.
So on the basis the ECC base are cash cows and they will pay for the S4 some way or another, where it's hosted it seems to be irrelevant to me. It's better to get them in and get them buying stuff. You know, and that's the thing. SAP are not getting the customers in to buy the other stuff on the shelf.
Yeah, and we had a chat last week ahead of recording, and you're making the really good point there about AI and the impact on data strategies, and the more kind of unstructured a customer's data was, the better it really the better the ROI was for AI in that context, which is a really was a really interesting notion, really, because everyone thinks, well, we've got to have everything tidied up perfect, you know, if I've got duplication of data, that's causing me all sorts of problems, the quality of data, but actually, from what you were saying,
it's rubbish.
Perfect for AI.
It is perfect for AI because you know, like all of us, we're on a bit of a journey. My heritage, I'm fascinated by data. So I did sort of like BI, the BI 7 Academy back in the day. I did Bank Analyzer with IBM. So I come from a strong data background. So I've always been fascinated. And I sort of like, once I got to see, the Ask tooling in SAC on BTP recently, it just made my head explode because with happiness, not rage, because you can finally start to see the construct of the data fabric. So we were having a conversation the other day in Dragon, just in terms of, you know, data lakes and all this old nonsense and data warehouses, and it's all gone. And we love the construct of the data fabric, that whole bit that you've got all this legacy data and all these data archives right across your, you know, enterprise. And you can finally link them all together logically through AI, and you could start to make sense of your legacy data. And I call it data alchemy, because you can take some really dirty data and you can turn it into gold. And that's what AI is about, really. Yep. It's not about making life easy for AI, because then any fool could go in and make sense of data and aggregate data. I mean, that's what we've been doing in Power BI for probably the last 5 years. Why Power BI is so strong now, because that ability to go in, identify legacy data architecture, and then aggregate the data, and Power BI is great for that. But AI is even better now. So when AI goes in, it'll go in like hunter seekers from the Matrix, looking for dirty data sources and cleaning it up. I mean, it just occurred to me, but look, you know what? If AI loves dirty data, then AI loves nothing more than a dirty core.
Yeah.
Come on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, okay. I know. I get it. And I've got plans to have Arne on from Smart Shift, and they're using an AI platform to remediate custom code. It's not an issue, right? You know, we go and we find it, we remediate it, and we check for security breach at the same time and clean it all up. It's kind of like that character, I'm just trying to think, in Finding Nemo, that was at the bottom of the pool just running around, the little shrimp, cleaning everything up, and it's all perfect again, you know.
I had a side conversation going the other day with someone who put out a blog about Clean Core and all this rubbish. And I just said to him, listen, and I might have been a bit core blimey. Sometimes I sort of like the cockney comes out a little bit too much.
It's all right, Alistair. We know that. I think everyone who knows you knows that as well.
But I just said to this fella, I said, listen, mate. I said, have you ever done an SAP upgrade? Have you actually ever done a SAP upgrade? Because if you'd actually done a SAP upgrade, you would know that it doesn't matter how dirty SAP system upgrading, the fix and fail was never particularly problematic. If you know what you're doing, you know, fix and fail and a dirty core is not problematic, because it goes with the territory. It doesn't, even before, as you said, you know, adding the AI level to the ability to do fix and fail remediation very, very quickly. The ability to have some decent offshore ABAP is ready to go as soon as you got a fail. Come on. So the whole construct of you can only have a clean core to enable you to have seamless or like SaaS upgrades, it's rubbish. It's absolute rubbish. And I did a piece the other week where I was trying to be a good citizen. I was trying to be, you know, positive.
I sense you are. I feel like this is like a confessional, you know, Alistair.
And,
you
know. I actually wrote the bit about I am pro clean core if there's the business case. So I've got a client now which clearly it works for them.
Yeah.
Happy days, other than Rise.
Yeah.
And I won't start talking about Satch accounting executive.
Get my bleep machine ready.
Exactly. But it was just this bit about saying, look, I like Clean Core as a construct. If you can do it, why wouldn't you? Because as I always say, SAP is best of breed target operating model. It's where you should be, really. So I'm massive about Clean Core if it works for you. But I was just saying, come on, you know. It just doesn't matter anymore if you're clean or if you're dirty, because the rate of singularity, the rate of product change, the rate things are moving on so quickly, it just isn't going to matter anymore. No. And therefore, we're constantly going on about it. You are delaying that 30,000 going on to S4. Yeah. That's how I feel.
Well, look, I'm conscious of time. And I'd just be interested to closing up, really, Alistair, to get what key advice would you give to clients already embarking on or considering their S4 migration and are sat there, I wouldn't say paralyzed, but thinking, when is there a right time? Because let's face it, if I was a CIO, if I was a CEO or CFO, and I'd been sat here almost, was it a week after or a month after SAP announced that extension from 25 to 27? That was what, 2020, wasn't it? And then we had COVID. We just get over that. We've had the Ukrainian crisis in Europe. You know, there's been a number of things. We've got the Middle East kicking off at the moment. So there's a number of things happening that have got the attention of organisations, or maybe they're destructive. You know, what key advice would you be giving to them at the moment?
I think first of all is just look at your own capacity and capability to deliver the change. Because ultimately, it's always going to depend upon your people to support the program. So if that's going to be a big issue, then that's one of the deciding factors. I think the other one is just in terms of where you are in terms of your own strategy, tactical and long-term, and where does S4 add value? For me, it's got to be the root of least disruption at the moment because of all those factors you spoke about. So for me, I would just say to people, do a hybrid brownfield and just move. Do it, because there's no reason why you shouldn't, but just do a selective brownfield, which is hybrid, essentially. Take what you need, okay, and get going, because if you do it that way, you can do it almost like a technical upgrade, to be quite honest. A lot of SAP customers still aren't using Fiori, which is mind-boggling, you know. And there's other distractions out there. You know, BW's coming to the end of day. Datasphere is far better. BPC's coming to the end of the line. PO's coming to. There's a lot of other things CIOs have got to think about. So the easier you make that S4 migration, the more you can then focus about the areas which add more value to the organisation.
Yep. Well, Alistair, it's been delightful speaking to you. Your views are always entertaining and very to the point, which is refreshing, and it's good to have a flip side of a point of view. So, Alistair, thanks very much for your time. If people do want to get into contact with you, where can they get in contact?
Just find me on LinkedIn.
Find you.
I'm
on
always
LinkedIn.
There.
And
I'm always there.
I'll copy you in when we drop this episode. Alistair, thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate you being on SAP Chat.
Cheers, mate. See you later.